Your lips and fingers were blue like you drowned. If it hadn't been for Magnus...
Magnus healed me?
What's he doing here in Alicante?
This isn't about Magnus, said Jocelyn with asperity. This is about you. She has been beside herself, thinking she let you go through the portal and you could have been killed. It was a call for experienced shadow hunters, not children.
It was Sebastian, Clary said. They didn't understand.
Sebastian's not your responsibility, speaking of which...
Jocelyn reached under the bed. When she straightened, she was holding Here's for us.
Is this yours?
It was in your weapons belt when they brought you home.
Yes, Clary clapped her hands together. I thought I'd lost it.
It's a Morganstern sword, Clary, her mother said, holding it as if it were a piece of moldy lettuce.
One I sold years ago.
Where did you get it?
The weapons shop where you sold it. The lady who owns the store now said that no one else would buy it.
Clary snatched Here's for us out of her mother's hand.
Look, I am a Morganstern. We can't pretend I don't have any of Valentine's blood in me. I need to figure out a way to be partly a Morganstern and to have that be all right. Not to pretend I'm someone else, someone with a made-up name that doesn't mean anything.
Jocelyn recoiled slightly.
Do you mean Frey?
It's not exactly a Shadowhunter name, is it?
No, her mother said. Not exactly, but it doesn't mean nothing.
I thought you picked it randomly.
Jocelyn shook her head.
You know the ceremony that must be performed on Nephilim children when they're born? The one that confers the protection that Jace lost when he came back from the dead? The one that allowed Lilith to get to him? Usually the ceremony is performed by an Iron Sister and a Silent Brother, but in your case, because we were hiding, I couldn't officially do that.
It was done by Brother Zachariah, and a female warlock stood in as the Iron Sister. I named you after her.
Frey. The last name was Frey.
The name was an impulse, said Jocelyn, not quite answering the question.
I liked her. She had known loss and pain and grief, but she was strong. Like I want you to be strong.
That's all I've ever wanted. For you to be strong and safe and not have to suffer what I suffered. The terror and the pain and the danger.
Brother Zachariah. Clary suddenly bolted upright. He was there last night. He tried to heal Jace, but the heavenly fire burned him.
Is he all right? He isn't dead, is he?
I don't know.
Jocelyn looked a little bewildered at Clary's vehemence.
I know he was taken to the Basilius. The Silent Brothers have been very secretive about everyone's condition. They certainly wouldn't speak about one of their own.
He said the brothers own the Herondales because of old ties, said Clary.
If he dies, it will be
no one's fault, Jocelyn said. I remember when he put the protection spell on you. I told him I never wanted you to have anything to do with Shadowhunters. He said it might not be my choice. He said that the pull of the Shadowhunters is like a riptide, and he was right. I thought we had fought free, but here we are, back in Alicante, back in a war. And there sits my daughter with blood on her face and a Morganstern blade in her hands. There was an undertone to her voice, shadowed and tense, that made Clary's nerves spark.
Mark, she said, did something else happen? Is there something you're not telling me?
Jocelyn exchanged a look with Luke. He spoke first.
You already know that yesterday morning before the Battle of the Citadel, Sebastian tried to attack the London Institute.
But no one was hurt, Robert said.
So Sebastian turned his attention elsewhere, Luke went on firmly. He left London with his forces and attacked the Praetor Lupus on Long Island. Almost all the Praetorians, including their leader, were slaughtered.
Jordan Kyle?
His voice cracked.
Jordan was killed.
Clary wasn't aware that she had moved, but suddenly she was no longer under the covers. She had swung her legs over the side of the bed and was reaching for the scabbard of Here's for us on the nightstand.
Clary, her mother said, reaching to place her long fingers on Clary's wrist, restraining her.
Clary, it's over. There's nothing you can do.
Clary could taste tears, hot and salty, burning the back of her throat, and under the tears, the rougher, darker taste of panic.
What about Maya? She demanded. If Jordan's hurt, is Maya all right? And Simon? Jordan was his guard. Is Simon all right?
I'm fine. Don't worry, I'm fine, said Simon's voice.
The bedroom door opened, and to Clary's utter astonishment, Simon came in, looking surprisingly shy.
She dropped Hyosphorus's scabbard onto the coverlet and launched herself to her feet, barreling into Simon so hard that she banged her head into his collarbone. She didn't notice if it hurt or not. She was too busy holding onto Simon as if they'd both just fallen out of a helicopter and were hurtling downward. She was grabbing fistfuls of his creased green sweater, mashing her face awkwardly into his shoulder as she fought not to cry. He held her, soothing her with awkward boy pats to her back and shoulders. When she finally let him go and stepped back, she saw that the sweater and jeans he was wearing were both a size too big for him. A metal chain hung around his throat.
"What are you doing here?" she demanded. "Whose clothes are you wearing?"
"It's a long story, and Alex, mostly," Simon said. His words were casual, but he looked strained and tense.
"You should have seen what I had on before. Nice pajamas, by the way."
Clary looked down at herself. She was wearing a pair of flannel pajamas, too short in the leg and tight in the chest, with fire trucks on them. Luke raised an eyebrow.
"I think those were mine when I was a kid."
"You can't seriously tell me there wasn't anything else you could have put me in. If you insist on trying to get yourself killed, I insist on being the one who chooses what you wear while you recover," Jocelyn said with a tiny smirk. "The pajamas of vengeance," Clary muttered. She grabbed up jeans and a shirt from the floor and looked back at Simon. "I'm going to change, and by the time I get back, you better be ready to tell me something about how you're here besides long story." Simon muttered something that sounded like bossy, but Clary was already out the door. She showered in record time, enjoying the feel of the water sluicing away the dirt of the battle. She was still worried about Jace, despite her mother's reassurances, but the sight of Simon had lifted her spirits. Maybe it didn't make sense, but she was happier that he was where she could keep an eye on him, rather than back in New York, especially after Jordan. When she got back to the bedroom, her damp hair tied back in a ponytail, Simon was perched on the nightstand, deep in conversation with her mother and Luke, recounting what happened to him in New York, how Maureen had kidnapped him and Raphael had rescued him and brought him to Alicante.
"Then I hope Raphael intends to attend the dinner held by the representatives of the Seeley Court tonight," Luke was saying. "Ansel Nightshade would have been invited, but if Raphael is standing in for him at the council, then he should be there, especially after what's happened with the Praetor. The importance of downworlder solidarity with Shadowhunters is greater than ever."
"Have you heard from Maya?" Simon asked.
"I hate the thought that she's alone now that Jordan's dead."
He winced a little as he spoke, as if the words "Jordan's dead" hurt to say.
"She's not alone. She's got the pack taking care of her. Bat's been in touch with me. She's physically fine. Emotionally, I don't know. She's the one Sebastian gave his message to after he killed Jordan. That can't have been easy."
"The pack is going to find itself having to deal with Maureen," said Simon. "She's thrilled the Shadow Hunters are gone. She's going to make New York her bloody playground if she gets her way."
"If she's killing mundanes, the Clave will have to dispatch someone to deal with her," said Jocelyn.
"Even if it means leaving Idris, if she's breaking the Accords..."
"Shouldn't Gia hear about this?" Clary said.
"We could go talk to her. She's not like the last consul. She'd listen to you, Simon."
Simon nodded. "I promised Raphael I'd talk to the Inquisitor and the consul for him." He broke off suddenly and winced.
Clary looked at him harder. He was sitting in a weak shaft of daylight, his skin ivory pale. The veins under the skin were visible, as stark and black as ink marks. His cheekbones looked sharp, the shadows under them harsh and indented.
"Simon, how long has it been since you've eaten anything?"
Simon flinched back. She knew he hated being reminded of his need for blood.
3 days, he said in a low voice.
"Food," Clary said, looking from her mother to Luke. "We need to get him food."
"I'm fine," Simon said unconvincingly. "I really am."
"The most reasonable place to get blood would be the vampire representative's house," said Luke.
"They have to provide it for the use of the Knights Children's Council member. I would go myself, but they're hardly going to give it to a werewolf. We could send a message."
"No messages, too slow. We'll go now."
Clary threw her closet open and grabbed for a jacket. "Simon, can you make it there?"
"It's not that far," Simon said, his voice subdued.
"A few doors down from the Inquisitors."
"Raphael will be sleeping," said Luke. "It's the middle of the day."
"Then we'll wake him up."
Clary shrugged the jacket on and zipped it up.
It's his job to represent vampires. He'll have to help Simon.
Simon snorted. Raphael doesn't think he has to do anything.
I don't care. Clary seized up Here's Forest and slid it into the scabbard.
Clary, I'm not sure you're well enough to go out like this, Jocelyn began.
I'm fine. Never felt better.
Jocelyn shook her head and the sunlight caught the red glints in her hair.
In other words, there's nothing I can do to stop you.
Nope, Clary said, shoving Here's Forest into her belt.
Nothing whatsoever.
The council member dinner is tonight, Luke said, leaning back against the wall. Clary, we're going to have to leave before you get back. We're putting a guard on the house to make sure you return home before dark.
You have got to be kidding me.
Not at all. We want you in, and the house closed up. If you don't come home before sunset, the guard will be notified.
It's a police date, Clary grumbled.
Come on, Simon, let's go.
Maya sat on the beach at Rockaway, looking out at the water and shivered. Rockaway was crowded in summer, but empty and windswept now in December. The water of the Atlantic stretched away, a heavy gray, the color of iron under a similarly iron-colored sky. The bodies of the werewolves Sebastian had killed, Jordan's among them, had been burned among the ruins of the Praetor Lupus. One of the wolves of the pack approached the tide line and cast the contents of a box of ashes onto the water. Maya watched as the surface of the sea turned black with the remains of the dead.
I'm sorry.
It was Bat, sitting down beside her on the sand. They watched as Rufus stepped up to the shoreline and opened another wooden box of ashes.
About Jordan.
Maya pushed her hair back. Gray clouds were gathering on the horizon. She wondered when it would start to rain.
I was going to break up with him, she said.
What?
Bat looked shocked.
I was going to break up with him, Maya said. The day Sebastian killed him.
I thought everything was going great with you guys. I thought you were happy.
Did you?
Maya dug her fingers into the damp sand.
You didn't like him.
He hurt you. It was a long time ago, and I know he tried to make up for it, but...
Bat shrugged.
Maybe I'm not so forgiving.
Maya exhaled.
Maybe I'm not either, she said. The town I grew up in, all these spoiled, thin, rich, white girls, they made me feel like crap because I didn't look like them. When I was 6, my mom tried to throw me a Barbie-themed birthday party. They make a black Barbie, you know, but they don't make any of the stuff that goes with her. Party supplies, the cake toppers, and all that. So we had a party for me with a blonde doll as a theme. And all these blonde girls came, and they all giggled at me behind their hands. The beach air was cold in her lungs. So when I met Jordan, and he told me I was beautiful, well, it didn't take that much. I was totally in love with him in about 5 minutes.
You are beautiful, Bat said.
A hermit crab inched his way along the sand, and he poked it with his fingers.
We were happy, Maya said. But then everything happened, and he turned me, and I hated him. I came to New York, and I hated him, and then he showed up again, and all he wanted was for me to forgive him. He wanted it so badly, and he was so sorry, and I knew people do crazy things when they get bitten. I've heard of people who've killed their families.
That's why we have the Praetor, said Bat.
Well, had them.
And I thought, how much can you hold someone accountable for what they did when they couldn't control themselves? I thought I should forgive him. He just wanted it so damn much. He'd done everything to make up for it. I thought we could go back to normal, go back to the way we used to be.
Sometimes you can't go back, Bat said. He touched the scar on his cheek thoughtfully.
Maya had never asked him how he'd gotten it.
Sometimes too much has changed.
We couldn't go back, Maya said. At least I couldn't. He wanted me to forgive him so much that I think sometimes he just looked at me and he saw forgiveness. Redemption. He didn't see me.
She shook her head.
I'm not someone's absolution. I'm just Maya.
But you cared about him, Bat said softly.
Enough that I kept putting off breaking up with him. I thought maybe I'd feel differently. And then everything started happening. Simon got kidnapped and we went after him and I was still going to tell Jordan...
I was going to tell him as soon as we got to the Prater, and then we arrived and it was... She swallowed. A slaughterhouse. They said when they found you, you were holding him. He was dead and his blood was washing out with the tide, but you were holding on to his body. Everyone should die with someone holding on to them, Maya said, taking a handful of sand. It feels so guilty. He died thinking I was still in love with him, that we were going to stay together and everything was fine. He died with me lying to him. She let the grains trickle out through her fingers. I should have told him the truth. Stop punishing yourself. Bat stood up. He was tall and muscular in his half-zipped anorak, the wind barely moving his short hair. The gathering gray clouds outlined him. Maya could see the rest of the pack gathered around Rufus, who was gesturing while he talked. If he hadn't been dying, then yes, you should have told him the truth, but he died thinking he was loved and forgiven. There are much worse gifts you can give someone than that. What he did to you was terrible, and he knew it, but few people are all good or all bad. Think of it as a gift you gave to the good in him. Wherever Jordan's going, and I do believe we all go somewhere, think of it as the light that will bring him home.
If you are leaving the Basileus, understand that it is against the advice of the brothers that you do so. Right, Jace said, pulling on his second gauntlet and flexing his fingers. You've made that pretty clear. Brother Enoch loomed over him, glowering, as Jace bent down with slow precision to do up the laces on his boots. He was sitting on the edge of the infirmary bed, one of a line of white-sheeted cots that ran the length of the long room. Many of the other cots were taken up with Shadowhunter warriors, recovering from the battle at the Citadel. Silent brothers moved along the beds like ghostly nurses. The air smelled of herbs and strange poultices. You should take another night to rest, at least. Your body is spent, and the heavenly fire still burns within you. Finished with his boots, Jace looked up. The arched ceiling above was painted with an interlaced design of healing runes in silver and blue. He'd been staring up at it for what felt like weeks, though he knew it had been only a night. The Silent Brothers, keeping all visitors away, had hovered over him with healing runes and poultices. They had also run tests on him, taking blood, hair, even eyelashes, touching him with a series of blades pressed to his skin. Gold, silver, steel, rowanwood. He felt fine. He had a strong feeling that keeping him in the Basileus was more about studying the heavenly fire than it was about healing him. I want to see Brother Zachariah, he said. He is well. You need not worry yourself about him. I want to see him, he said. I nearly killed him at the Citadel. That was not you. That was the heavenly fire, and it did anything but harm him. Jace blinked at the odd choice of words. He said when I met him that he believes that a debt is owed the Herondales. I'm a Herondale. He'd want to see me. And then you intend to depart the Basileus? Jace stood up. There's nothing wrong with me. I don't need to be in the infirmary. Surely you could be using your resources more fruitfully on the actually wounded. He caught his jacket off a hook by the bed. Look, you can either bring me to Brother Zachariah, or I can wander around yelling for him until he turns up. You are a great deal of trouble, Jace Herondale. So I've been told, Jace said. There were arched windows between the beds. They cast wide spokes of light across the marble floor. The day was beginning to dim. Jace had woken in the early afternoon with a silent brother by his bed. He'd jerked upright, demanding to know where Clary was, as recollections of the night before poured through him. He recalled the pain when Sebastian had stabbed him, recalled the fire blazing up the blade, recalled Zachariah burning. Clary's arms around him, her hair falling down around them both, the cessation of pain that had come with darkness. And then, nothing. After the brothers had reassured him that Clary was all right, safe at Amatis's. He'd asked after Zachariah, whether the fire had harmed him, but had only received irritatingly vague answers. Now he followed Enoch out of the infirmary hall and into a narrower, white-plastered corridor. Doors opened off the corridor. As they passed one, Jace caught a quick glimpse of a writhing body tied to a bed, and heard the sound of screaming and cursing. A silent brother stood over a thrashing man dressed in the remnants of red gear. Blood spattered the white wall behind them. "Amalric Kriegsmesse," said Brother Enoch without turning his head. "One of Sebastian's Indarkened. As you know, we have been attempting to reverse the spell of the Infernal Cup." Jace swallowed. There didn't seem anything to say. He had seen the ritual of the Infernal Cup performed. In his heart of hearts, he didn't believe the spell could be reversed. It created too fundamental a change. But then neither had he ever imagined that a silent brother could be as human as Brother Zachariah had always seemed. Was that why he was so determined to see him? He remembered what Clary had told him Brother Zachariah had said once, when she'd asked him if he'd ever loved anyone enough to die for them. "Two people. There are memories that time does not erase. Ask your friend Magnus Bane, if you do not believe me. Forever does not make loss forgettable, only bearable." There had been something about those words, something that spoke of a sorrow and a sort of memory that Jace did not associate with the brothers. They had been a presence in his life since he was 10, pale, silent statues who brought healing, who kept secrets, who did not love or desire or grow or die, but only were. But Brother Zachariah was different. "We are here." Brother Enoch had paused in front of an unremarkable, white-painted door. He lifted a broad hand and knocked. There was a sound from inside, as of a chair scraping back, and then a male voice. "Come in." Brother Enoch swung the door open and ushered Jace inside. The windows were west-facing, and it was very bright in the room, the light of the sun as it went down painting the walls with pale fire. There was a figure at the window, a silhouette, slender, not in the robes of a brother. Jace turned to look at Brother Enoch in surprise, but the silent brother had already left, closing the door behind him. "Where's Brother Zachariah?" Jace said. "I'm right here." A quiet voice, soft, a little out of tune, like a piano that hadn't been played in years. The figure had turned from the window. Jace found himself looking at a boy only a few years older than himself. Dark hair, a sharp, delicate face, eyes that seemed young and old at the same time. The runes of the brothers marked his high cheekbones, and as the boy turned, Jace saw the pale edge of a faded rune at the side of his throat. A Parabantai, like he was. And Jace knew, too, what that faded rune meant. A Parabantai whose other half was dead. He felt his sympathy leap toward Brother Zachariah as he imagined himself without Alec, with only that faded rune to remind him where once he had been bonded to someone who knew all the best and worst parts of his soul.
"Jace Herondale," said the boy. "Once more a Herondale is the bringer of my deliverance. I should have anticipated."
"I didn't... That's not..." Jace was too stunned to think of anything clever to say. "It's not possible. Once you're a silent brother, you can't change back. You... I don't understand." The boy, Zachariah, Jace supposed, though not a brother anymore, smiled. It was a heartbreakingly vulnerable smile, young and gentle.
"I'm not sure I entirely understand either," he said. "But I was never an ordinary silent brother. I was brought into the life because there was a dark magic upon me. I had no other way to save myself."
He looked down at his hands, the unlined hands of a boy, smooth the way few Shadow Hunters' hands were smooth. The brothers could fight as warriors, but rarely did.
"I left everything I knew and everything I loved. Didn't leave it entirely, perhaps, but
but erected a wall of glass between myself and the life I'd had before. I could see it, but I could not touch, could not be a part of it. I began to forget what it was like to be an ordinary human.
We're not ordinary humans. Zachariah looked up. Oh, we tell ourselves that, he said.
But I have made a study of shadow hunters now, over the past century. And let me tell you that we are more human than most human beings. When our hearts break, they break into shards that cannot be easily fit back together. I envy mundanes their resilience sometimes.
More than a century old. You seem pretty resilient to me.
I thought I would be a silent brother forever. We, they, don't die, you know. They fade after many years. Stop speaking, stop moving. Eventually they are entombed alive. I thought that would be my fate. But when I touched you with my ruined hand, when you were wounded, I absorbed the heavenly fire in your veins. It burned away the darkness in my blood. I became again the person I was before I took my vows. Before even that, I became what I've always wanted to be.
Jason's voice was hoarse.
Did it hurt? Zachariah looked puzzled.
I'm sorry? When Clary stabbed me with Glorious, it was agonizing. I felt as if my bones were melting down to ashes inside me. I kept thinking about that when I woke up. I kept thinking about the pain, and whether it hurt when you touched me.
Zachariah looked at him in surprise.
You thought about me? About whether I was in pain?
Of course.
Jace could see their reflections in the window behind Zachariah. Zachariah was as tall as he was, but thinner, and with his dark hair and pale skin, he looked like a photo negative of Jace.
Herondales.
Zachariah's voice was a breath, half laughter, half pain.
I had almost forgotten. No other family does so much for love, or feels so much guilt for it. Don't carry the weight of the world on you, Jace. It's too heavy for even a Herondale to bear.
I'm not a saint, Jace said. Maybe I should bear it.
Zachariah shook his head.
You know, I think, the phrase from the Bible, Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. You have been weighed in the balance, and have been found wanting.
Yes, I know it. The writing on the wall.
The Egyptians believed that at the gate of the dead, your heart was weighed on scales. And if it weighed more than a feather, your path was the path to hell. The fire of heaven takes our measure, Jace Herondale, like the scales of the Egyptians. If there is more evil in us than good, it will destroy us. I only just lived, and so did you. The difference between us is that I was only brushed by the fire, whereas it entered your heart. You carry it in you still, a great burden and a great gift.
But all I've been trying to do is get rid of it.
You cannot rid yourself of this. Brother Zachariah's voice had become very serious. It is not a curse to be rid of. It is a weapon you have been entrusted with. You are the blade of heaven. Make sure you are worthy.
You sound like Alec, Jace said. He's always on about responsibility and worthiness.
Alec, you're Parabatai. The Lightwood boy.
You...
Jace indicated the side of Zachariah's throat.
You had a Parabatai too, but your rune has faded.
Zachariah looked down. He is long dead, he said. I was... When he died, I...
He shook his head, frustrated.
For years I have spoken only with my mind, though you hear my thoughts as words, he said. The process of shaping language in the ordinary way... of finding speech, does not come easily to me now.
He raised his head to look at Jace.
Value your Parabatai, he said, for it is a precious bond. All love is precious. It is why we do what we do. Why do we fight demons? Why are they not fit custodians of this world? What makes us better? It is because they do not build, but destroy. They do not love, but hate only. We are human and fallible, we shadow hunters.
But if we did not have the capacity to love, we could not guard humanity.